All right, the Education Policy Committee meeting will come to order. We have a fairly lengthy agenda. I would like to remind members that yesterday we had the meeting on the permanent school trust lands. There was some information passed out. If for some reason it is not still in your folder, if you were not here, it's not in your folder, we do have some extra at my office, and Bethany will be glad to give you one of those. I think you need to kind of understand our trust lands and the income source that they provide, et cetera.
So did you check on the capital conversation?
No. All right, we'll go right ahead. First item on our agenda is House File 1968. Representative Johnson, would you like to move your bill?
Yes, I'll move House File 1986, actually.
Did I say the wrong thing?
It's 1986.
Okay. And you have an amendment, correct?
And that would be to go to K-12 finance.
No, I think, isn't it going to civil law?
Oh, we can go to civil law first. That's fine.
Civil law, yeah. Okay.
And I do have a delete all amendment.
All right, members, you've got the amendment. I just can't find mine, but I'm sure it's here.
It's
all right, it's
A.
A. Amendment 0863A. Representative Johnson moves his amendment. Would you like to explain your amendment, Representative?
Madam Chair, if I could give a brief summary of the bill and then explain the changes that are in the amendment, that might be easier.
Okay.
Everyone, I think, knows what this bill is. It's the governor's initiative. Regarding driver's license and absenteeism. And essentially what it says is that students that are excessively absent under a definition that's already in law can lose their driver's license or won't get their driver's license for a period of time. This is optional for school districts. They can opt out of this system by a majority vote of the school board. And essentially what it is, it's a tool for both school districts, teachers, and for parents to encourage school attendance of 16, 17, and 18-year-olds. Unfortunately, as some students approach graduation, they need a little extra incentive to take seriously their last few years of school. And I think by linking a driver's license to attendance, schools and parents will have an additional enforcement tool that allows them to take away a privilege that many high school students take very seriously, probably more seriously than many things in their life. It will not solve the absenteeism problem. There are certainly some students who will continue to drive even if they lose their driver's license. But my hope, and I think some evidence from other states will show that at least with some and maybe with many students, this will provide an extra incentive to attend school on a regular basis. At least 18 other states have done this in some form, and we have seen some level of success in several states from it. And I will let the department testify to that if people have questions a little more. Madam Chair, let me just briefly explain my amendment before we take a vote on that. The differences, the substantive differences in this delete all from the original bill that everyone has seen, I believe are fourfold. Number one, this provides a waiver provision so that school districts can opt out. That was always the intention, but we forgot to put it in the first bill. It changes the definition of what excessively absent is, and that definition is 7 days in a school year without valid excuse. So that will be the definition. There's some wiggle room in there for school districts that follow slightly different rules, but that is the definition that's already in law. It removes references to non-public schools, and we have that debate every year about several bills as to whether we want to be regulating non-public schools or not, and I would prefer not to do that. And then finally, there were some issues with data privacy and federal law. We made some changes to that so that we are certain to be in compliance with federal law regarding data privacy, and the Department of Public Safety will be happy to testify to that if there are any questions. That is the delete all amendment, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Johnson. Are there questions regarding the delete everything amendment? Representative Burnett.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. Just one question about the private schools. If it's an opt-in, opt-out kind of procedure, what difference does it make? Why wouldn't some private schools would want to opt in?
Madam Chair, Representative Biernat.
Representative Johnson.
And that's certainly an argument that we see this as a tool rather than a negative mandate, but I think the philosophy has been if we can avoid referring to non-public schools when it comes to a statute where we're asking them or suggesting that they do things, we're probably better off because it tends to create a controversy that need not be there. It's maybe more political than anything else, to be honest with you.
Are there any further questions or comments of Representative Johnson on the amendment? All right, hearing none, all those in favor of the amendment, please signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? The amendment is adopted. Please proceed.
All right, Madam Chair, the bill in a nutshell, as I mentioned, there is an opt-out provision, a majority vote of the school board. They would have to have that vote once. It's not like the Pledge of Allegiance bill where they would need to do it annually. They can opt out, and then they can opt out. They can opt back in a subsequent year should they choose. For those school districts that choose to be in this system, the 16 and 17-year-old students in those schools, in order to obtain a driver's license, a provisional driver's license, they must still meet all the same requirements as before, training, pass a test, etc., but they also now must present a written certificate of school attendance, which the school will provide to them. And the certificate would show that, and I'll read directly from the bill here, the student is enrolled and attending school and is not absent without valid excuse one or more class periods on 7 days within a single school year for the current and preceding school year. There's also provision that says this is consistent with district policy, so if they follow a slightly different standard, we would allow that as well. If a student's license is suspended or if they don't get their license, the license is reinstated. And I will read from Ms. Larson's summary here because she puts it more simply than the bill does. The license is reinstated when either the person becomes age 18, an expulsion is reversed if they have been expelled, or the later of 120 days after the department's cancellation notice, or the end of the semester when the student returns to school. There's a hardship waiver in the bill. The superintendent appoints an appeals commission or an appeals committee. That committee has a hearing for any student who chooses to appeal the loss of their license. And the committee then would make a recommendation to the superintendent, and the superintendent would make the non-appealable decision as to whether a waiver would be granted. And finally, just one mention of the procedural issue. When a student is a continuing truant under the law, which I believe is defined as 3 unexcused absences in a school year, the parent is notified of several things currently under the law, and what would be added to that is the risk after 4 more absences of the student losing their license. So, Madam Chair, that's the bill.
Representative, we have a question for you. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Anders, Johnson. Too many Scandinavians in here. Yeah. I just want to know why, 7 days was decided as the qualification. Does that compare with other states that are doing this, or why that?
Madam Chair, Representative Erdahl.
Representative Johnson.
That is actually currently in the law, and Mr. Marcus might be able to explain that a little better, but that's currently defined in statute.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Chair.
I'm sorry, Mr. Marcus. I could not figure out who had just said Madam Chair. Sorry. Go ahead.
Greg Marcus, Minnesota Department of Education. Yes, as Representative Johnson said, indeed, it's the 7 days is currently in state law. It's the definition of habitual truant, a habitual truant means a child under the age of 16 who is absent from attendance from school without lawful excuse for 7 days if the child is in elementary school. Or for one or more class periods on 7 days if the child is in middle school, junior high, or high school, or a child is 16 or 17 years of age who is absent from attendance at school without lawful excuse for one or more class periods on 7 days and from which the student has not lawfully withdrawn. So that's hanging this bill on that current definition.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Heidgerken.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Johnson, I commend you. The bill is far better than when I first saw it, your amendment, and you and I had discussions on the concerns I had with the rural schools, especially not having taxis and buses, et cetera, would be very detrimental to them. But again, I'm making it a local option. I like that, and I can support it. Thank you.
All right. Representative Burrell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Johnson, my question has to do with the superintendent's committee. It doesn't really specify if this is a committee of the community, a committee of teachers, a committee, and how many members would this committee be? Are two people a committee, or does it have to be five, an odd number? And is it a majority vote? Does it have to be, you know, how do they decide if it's guilty or innocent?
Madam Chair, Representative
Johnson.
Burrell, I think the thought was to essentially leave that in the hands of the superintendent to allow some flexibility as to what the superintendent thinks would work for that particular district. I don't know, Mr. Marcus, if you have any other thoughts on that.
Mr. Marcus.
Madam Chair, that's correct. The discretion of the superintendent, we trust that as wise administrators, they'll make the best use of getting together the balance on that committee that would be most able to speak to the needs of their distinct community.
I think before we won't take any more questions at this point. I think we'll hear from your witnesses because I believe some of the questions will be answered by the testimony that we will hear. So would you like to call your witnesses as you see fit?
Go ahead with your list.
Okay, I have Marianne Nelson from the Department of Education. Go ahead,
Madam Chair, members of the committee. In the interest of time, I think several good points have been made about this bill. I would just supplement that when you work with students, as many of us have in the public schools, the opportunity and the privilege of driving a car has become a really, really, really big part of their culture. And part of trying to communicate messages that the society and those of us who care about young people, part of that means trying to understand that culture. And I think this is a wonderful tool for schools to be able to educate students about the importance of attendance. We talk a lot about scarce resources in Minnesota. We talk a lot about how we would like to have more money to fund remediation programs. There was an Office of the Legislative Auditor Report in 1998, Minnesota Legislative Auditor Report, on the cost of remediation programs in Minnesota. And there were several key points made. I won't belabor the report except to say that the single most important factor to bringing students up to where they should be in school was attendance. Again, this whole bill is written around not hitting anyone over the head with a hammer, but trying to communicate that driving is a privilege. This legislature in the state of Minnesota spends a lot of money on schools. We have teachers in classrooms who want to educate students, but we can't do that if they're not there. Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. We have also the Acting Commissioner of the Department of Public Safety. Assistant Acting Commissioner. Lynn Willenbring.
Madam Chair.
Welcome.
Thank you. Lynn Willenbring, the Department of Public Safety. We have worked closely with the Department of Education in crafting this language that will not only work for the schools and the school districts, but for the Department of Public Safety as well. So we have great confidence that we can administer this program in such a way that it can achieve the objectives that the Department of Education is seeking to achieve.
All right, we'll take a couple questions, I guess. Representative Carlson.
Madam Chair, you had a question on the Department of Public Safety. You know, this bill has been around for many years. And at one time, the Department of Public Safety used to take a position in opposition. And the argument that they used at the time was that there were a certain number of young people that would drive anyway. In fact, the testimony by Ms. Nelson a moment ago about the high priority of the automobile and driving. And so we really kind of had a tug-of-war, if you would, between the majority on this committee at the time. I wasn't the one who came to the bill, but even though I was chair, it did pass out and went over to transportation. And the Department of Public Safety argued both in this committee and in that committee on that very point. There were some risk factors. And so my question is, why the change? And if you could address that particular point, since that was the position of the department apparently until recent years.
Commissioner Willenbring.
Madam Chair, Representative, I think in essence what we're looking at is that all we can do is remove the privilege of driving legally. We run into the same situation with DWI laws, with people that are driving without insurance. There's no way to guarantee that every driver out there is driving legally. And so what we have to look at is the balance between the risk of that and the benefits to be gained by keeping these kids in school. And I do believe that a large number of teenagers, being the mother of one myself, I can attest to the fact that that driving privilege is something they hold very dear. And I think this is a great tool for the schools and the school districts to use to encourage those kids that are maybe on the edge to stay in school.
Representative Burnett.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I did carry this bill in 97 along with Representative Maris. I think we had a good time going through the process, and it was quite a challenge in your committee, but we did get it out. The different dimension is that in the bill that we carried then, it had really two parts, for attendance and also for failing the basic skills test, and the committee ended up stripping that. But again, it went back to the two committees in transportation and the public safety department made another argument, and that was it would cost so much to spend time going after students with withholding, and it was a fiscal note that actually killed the bill, because I like what he's done here, and I think it makes a lot of sense. But are we going to have that same problem? Is there going to be a hidden fiscal note that suddenly pops up? And I guess the question is, why was there a fiscal note when I carried the bill and suddenly not?
There's always good questions in this committee, Commissioner. Go ahead.
Madam Chair, Representative Viernot, don't take it personally, but 7 years ago we didn't have the technology capabilities that we do today. We anticipate that this is going to be done primarily through the Driver and Vehicle Services website. So other than the certificate that the schools will have to provide to the students one time, after that it'll just be an electronic process where the school district can notify Driver and Vehicle Services that Johnny is not meeting the attendance requirements and should have his license canceled, his driving privileges.
Madam Chair.
Representative Johnson.
I should mention, too, that there likely will be a fiscal note to this when I get to K-12 finance. I don't have it yet. It's not based upon administrative costs. It's based upon an estimate of the number of students who will stay in school as opposed to drop out, which means we'll have a higher cost down the road because there'll be more kids in school. And the department is trying to figure out how to make that estimate. So that's what the fiscal note will be based on, but there probably will be one, just so you know that.
Madam Chair.
Representative Burnett.
So follow up on that question, because that's the other kind of issue that looms in the background here. The highest dropout rate is in the inner city of St. Paul, Minneapolis, and those kids really don't get driver's license or cars because most of them can't afford it. So will there really be an increase in attendance, and will there be an increase in the number of students still in school based on the fact that a lot of the poor kids aren't going to be affected by this bill at all?
Madam Chair?
Representative Johnson.
Representative Burnett, I don't know the answer to that question. Mr. Marcus can testify a little bit to what some other states have seen. Certainly there's going to be a lot of students that this doesn't work for. If you don't drive, you don't have a car, your driver's license probably doesn't mean all that much to you. But there are also a lot of students who it will mean a lot for, and if we can at least get to some of the students through this tool, I think we ought to try to use it.
All right. Representative Latz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ma'am, I know that there are
suspensions, revocations, and cancellations under the Department of Public Safety laws, each of which have different requirements for reinstatement. Will those affect the mechanism for reinstatement of these driving privileges if the student requalifies under the bill?
Madam Chair?
I'm sorry, Ms. Willenbring.
Madam Chair, Representative Latz, we were very careful in how we crafted the language. You'll notice it does say it's a cancellation, and when we talk about reinstating, we talk about reinstating their driving privileges, not a reinstatement. And the reason for that is that a reinstatement under law requires a reinstatement fee to be paid. We didn't think that that was appropriate for these kids. So it's simply a cancellation, similar to if your driving privileges were canceled for lack of proof of insurance, and then it's reinstated without an additional fee being paid.
All right. Thank you. Ms. Representative Yaros, yes. This is the last question for this witness.
Madam Chair and members, I have had a problem with high school, senior high students. I've had a chance to teach in elementary, secondary, and post-secondary, and I've often wondered why those seniors mature so fast in 3 months between their senior year and college. It's not that they mature so fast, it's because they're treated the way, as kids in high school, and they're, you know, big kids, and they should be treated almost like college kids. Why do we count days and attendance? Why is that more important than the result of the tests, what they learn? I think if we treated high school students more like college students, they would probably be acting like college students, or they would be acting their age. But what I saw in senior high school is that seniors and you know, all three levels, all three grades are treated like grade school kids, and that's how they act. And that's why they, you know, there's so much absenteeism. That's, at least that's one of the reasons. There's a lot going on learning in elementary and elementary schools and college, but high school, especially senior high and junior high, are sort of a lull. In most countries, pre-professional education is done in high school, pre-med, pre-law, pre-engineering, and so on. Here we do it in college, and we spend a lot of money. You know, if the senior high school students were required to produce and were treated like adults, you know, like grown-ups, perhaps we would have better results.
Thank you, Representative. I'm assuming that is a comment and not a question for anybody in particular.
And
all right, thank
probably
you.
Probably nobody listening.
We have... Actually, I think we were listening, as a matter of fact. All right, our next witnesses. Thank you, Ms. Willenbring. Please stay around for a little bit in case there's further questions. We have Mr. Bartholomew and Charlie Kite. Would you both come up here, please, if you're here? Go ahead, Mr. Bartholomew.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. My name is Jim Bartholomew with the Minnesota Business Partnership. The Business Partnership supports House File 1986 as a means of providing our schools with an extra tool to help encourage students to stay in school. As you've heard already this morning, and as you know, there, for a variety of reasons, some students become disengaged from their schools or feel that staying in school, completing school, is no longer important to them in their lives. And Minnesota, to your credit, has developed a number of school-based and community-based programs to try to help these students stay in school and complete. Unfortunately, despite our truancy and dropout prevention efforts, the percent of students who drop out of school has remained relatively flat between the class of 1996 and the class of 2001. Again, at about 10% every year, we have a 10% dropout rate. Not surprisingly, the financial consequences for students who don't graduate from high school are immense and lifelong. For example, according to the U.S. Census data, adults between the ages of 25 and 34 who drop out of high school or don't acquire a GED earn up to 30% less than their peers who did complete high school. This earnings gap significantly widens when one compares the income levels of high school dropouts and those who earn a bachelor's degree. By linking school attendance and the ability to drive, schools could provide a powerful incentive to at least some students, perhaps not all, but at least to some, to stay in school and ultimately graduate. As Representative Johnson mentioned, 18 other states have had similar laws to what's being proposed in House File 1986. The first state to adopt such a law was West Virginia in 1988, and the list of states now ranges from California, Florida, New Hampshire, and Wisconsin. Specific data on the effectiveness of laws linking student driving privileges to school attendance is somewhat hard to find. However, that's largely because most studies review the driver's license provisions in combination with other initiatives designed to lower truancy rates. Florida, again, as was mentioned earlier, has perhaps the best data on the effectiveness of its law, and their studies indicate that approximately 8,000 students stayed in school because of the link to driving privileges. There's similar data from a study of Wisconsin's law that links to driving privileges. In particular, one of the school districts saw a reduction in truancy of over 60%. Though the Wisconsin study, like the others, didn't have a clear delineation between the driver's license component and other components of their 1997 law. We believe House File 1986, if adopted, could provide schools who choose to implement it a tool to work with students to encourage them to not only stay in school but also graduate. Again, because of the negative lifelong consequences for students who fail to graduate from high school are so significant, we would urge you to adopt House File 1986 as a means of creating an additional incentive for students to stay in school. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Bartholomew. Mr. Kite.
Good morning, Representative Corr and members of the committee. I'm Charlie Kite. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Association of School Administrators, representing the superintendents and central office administrators in the state. We're here to testify in support of House File 1986, the driver's license bill. It's important that we try to find as many ways as possible to get all of the parties pulling together in regard to students' education. We need to have the teachers working hard, we need to have the parents being supportive, and we have to have the students engaged as well. Let me preface my very brief remarks by first of all saying, in our conversations with school superintendents around the state, the great majority of students going to our K-12 public schools are very good students. They actually have very good attendance, and they're pulling pretty hard. That said, we also understand that the anticipation to drive is a powerful motivator for many students. And we've spoken to about 30 middle school teachers, and these teachers report to us that they often feel they don't have very many tools to work with to really convince students to be in school as much as possible. And they really reacted positively to this idea. They felt that there was some casualness about students' need to attend school, and felt that an incentive such as this would really help. So we recognize the bill has some limitations. One of the limitations has been overcome with the amendment this morning. We were concerned that the original definition of poor attendance was such that it wasn't going to be a good motivator for students. But with the change that was made this morning, we actually feel that this will work better. So we also like the fact that the bill is voluntary for school districts, so that if a school district feels that they cannot do this, they can opt out. But our hope is that actually most school districts in the state will participate if this bill actually does become statute. I would stand for any questions you might have.
Thank you, Mr. Kite. Members, you may address quick questions to either Mr. Kite or Mr. Bartholomew. Representative Latz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Kite, you stated that you had two reservations, but you only addressed one of them that you said was taken care of this morning. Would you tell us what the second reservation was about the bill that you don't think has been dealt with?
I think I made a misstatement if I said that. What I really meant was to speak about the one reservation that's been addressed. Although I will say this. There was a question earlier that I'll take a moment to address. Somebody brought the question up earlier of the review panel and how a student would have a chance to have their attendance reviewed by somebody in the school. I suspect that will cause a little bit of consternation on the part of districts, although we do have various types of review panels for other kinds of student behaviors and other kinds of student issues right now. In the best of all worlds, I would hope that those review panels would be strongly populated by students and student leaders who would then have to participate in making some decisions that affect other students' decisions. And that would be a positive thing.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Kite, don't most school districts already have an attendance review panel? And couldn't they serve two purposes here? Couldn't they be the attendance review panel but also the review panel for this proposed law?
For those schools that have such a attendance review panel, I think this will just be an automatic. And if they don't happen to have it, this will be a piece that will have to come into play.
Did you have a... Okay. All right. Representative Bernardi, this will be the last question of these witnesses.
I just had one question, and I'm not sure exactly who this goes to. It might go to the author of the bill or Dr. Nelson. I just had a question regarding private schools. It says that private school students, that's one way. They can just show that they're a private school student and get their driver's license. Is this an option that private schools would like to have, and can the state do that if they wanted to?
Actually, Representative Johnson did address that earlier, but maybe you could just very briefly address it again.
Madam Chair, someone else asked that question as well right at the beginning, and frankly, this is more a political decision than anything else, because whenever we put non-public schools into a bill, everything seems to erupt on one side or the other. It probably is an option that some non-public schools would like, but we've chosen not to have it in the bill, just to kind of clean it up.
All right, thank you. I think that I have no further questions here for you gentlemen. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Next witnesses are Mr. Kroonquist and Mr. Meeks. Welcome back, Mr. Meeks. We haven't seen you much this year.
Yes, Madam Chair, it's great to be here. thank you very much. My name is Bob Meeks. I'm on the staff of the School Board Association, and this is the first time we've had a chance to see the Delete All Amendment, so you can see we're kind of trying to put some of our notes together. But just some general comments. I think there is a provision in law that now that allows parents to pull a license of a child if they're a minor child that is skipping school or for other reasons. So I think there's some options out there for parental control now. This appears to be giving the state or the government much more control, and I think it's really going to be interesting looking at some of these patterns out in mainly greater Minnesota, but also here in the metropolitan area. If you opt out, what's that mean as far, and I'm talking about the school board opting out of requiring this, what's that mean if you're in declining district? Do you hope that you get certain kids from other districts? If you opt out, does that become a political decision? If you opt in, is that a way of getting rid of some of your problem kids that maybe cost a little bit more and you're not quite sure you want to handle? So I think it's going to really be interesting to look at how this sets up statewide once if it goes into law. But I also would question if this is good public policy, if this is policy that the state believes needs to be in place, then let's do it for all kids. Let's not say that one set of kids should be treated different than others. If it's good for public schools, it's good for private schools. Now, just a couple of specifics on the bill. On page 8, Madam Chair, is, I think, a problem on line 16, 17, and 18. And it says that the school principal or the administrator must certify current and preceding school year attendance records. What happens if the kid comes from another state or another country, as we're seeing quite often? or even under open enrollment, we don't necessarily get those records. And it's saying here that the principals must certify that that record is correct. If you look at page 9, I hope this is a mistake, because I don't believe you want a school administrator on lines 26 and 27 reversing a pupil's expulsion under the Pupil Fair Dismissal Act. That is a very formal legal hearing, and now you're giving an administrator a chance to completely reverse that decision based on his or her judgment. And on page 10, down on lines 29, 30, 31, 32, 33, this whole hardship waiver. Yes, there are students, but I'm not sure we're the ones that should be doing it. If public safety believes this is a good policy, and it appears they do through their testimony, let public safety conduct these hearings. Let public safety make the decision of what a hardship is under their, evidently, what they believe is a pretty good law. This is a formal hearing, and it's going to be based on this whole a formal hearing before a committee with evidence and testimony. I would suggest that any district that doesn't have an attorney involved is nuts, because this is going to have some ramifications down the way. And so I would suggest there's a little more cost to this than just maybe the additional students we're going to keep in school. I think there may be some costs to school districts for the cost of the hearing. And the 2 days that's mentioned, the committee must, this committee that's established, must within 2 days of the hearing for a final decision, its recommendations, evidence, and other things must be submitted. That is extremely tight. And any of you have either taught or been on a school board or something know that just to gather this stuff, to get the stuff together and to get it out and make that recommendation, if this is, I hope this isn't the 23rd of December, because it isn't going to be done. 2 days just doesn't work. If you're going to ask us or require us to do this, you've got to give us more time. Madam Chair, I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Representative Segrin.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Mr. Meeks. Representative Anderson mentioned attendance hearing committees. Do they consider the same kinds of issues regarding a student's attendance, and are they formal hearings? Maybe I should ask Representative Anderson about that. He referenced that. Is that kind of the same review process where you're reviewing a student's attendance and maybe making decisions about truancy issues, etc.?
Did you want to respond, Representative Anderson?
I certainly can, Madam Chair.
All right.
Representative Segrin, Madam Chair, I can only speak for my own school district experience, and having served on an attendance appeals group as a teacher, that, you know, when they come to us, you know, with our own attendance policy, truancy issues, you know, we already have that in place. And that was my question before, was if a school district like Austin already has that in place, it's something that, you know, is just another thing for that particular committee to look at.
Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Meeks, you spoke about your concern that this didn't extend to private schools. And I think this is a quote you said, if it's good for the public schools, it should be good for the private schools. But isn't this supposed to be about the kids, not the schools? I mean, shouldn't this apply to all students equally across the state? Doesn't this just allow me to say, I'm not dropping out, I'm going to Our Mother Perpetual Homework, and, you know, suddenly I don't have this liability hanging over me?
Madam Chair and Representative Dabney, thank you for correcting me, because what I meant, and I'm not trying to be Woodley here correcting Ventura, but what I meant to say is that what's good for some students should be good for all students. I didn't mean to say schools, I meant to say students, so thank you.
Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, Mr. Meeks, if based on your express concerns here, if superintendent superintendent, where the legal onus falls here, fails to comply for whatever reasons, some of the time the parameters here, are there, as you read this, are there legal ramifications and consequences, or can you see a scenario where there might be?
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Mariani, I think you're going to have an attorney testifying in a minute that would be better to answer that question than I am, sir. I think Mr. Aronson could answer that question.
Thank you.
All right, are there any further questions for Mr. Meeks? Let's go on to Mr. Kroonquist, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. My name is Scott Kroonquist with the Association of Metropolitan School Districts. And we do come down on the bill a little bit different than Mr. Meeks and MSBA. We do support the bill as amended, and we actually like the local control provision. The bottom line is not every district does have an attendance problem, and we don't think a cookie-cutter approach in this instance makes sense. Instead, you're giving local districts a tool, and for those districts where attendance is an issue, they can use it. If it's not, they don't have to use it. So we do appreciate Representative Johnson's work in that and making clarifying that it is the local option. We also think it sends a good message in that accountability is a multi-pronged approach here. And in fact, students and parents do have to shoulder some of the accountability and responsibility. And in fact, participation does matter. If we don't have the students in class, they're not going to learn, they're not going to meet the standards, et cetera. So I'll leave it at that. I think you've heard quite a bit of testimony already, Madam Chair.
And Madam Chair, can I correct one thing? I did not speak in opposition to the bill. I raised some concerns of the bill and some technical, what I consider technical aspects of the bill. We are neutral on the bill. We're not speaking in opposition, nor are we supporting it.
Representative Johnson, I think nobody responded to the question on if a student is new, how do they determine attendance records? Is it just on the basis of whatever they have for that school? That was one of the other, that was the other issue Mr. Meeks raised.
Madam Chair, I'll let Mr. Marcus answer that.
Mr. Marcus.
Chair Sikora, committee. The issue is a good question. Certainly the school, if the student has been there presently in the past, is aware of the student's attendance. If they have moved in from out of state, in many instances those records don't transfer as well as they might. In such an instance, it might be the committee's will to decide to go to the current year instead. The reason that the look back was put in there was primarily at the request of a middle school principal who had looked at the bill and said that they very much liked the idea that if you're going to incent attendance through this, that you may want to consider putting in the look back so that a student that was on the cusp at 15 or 16 would actually consider, golly, you know, if I start messing around this year, the year preceding my ability to get a permit, that might endanger the timeliness in which I get that permit and thus have that same kind of positive effect on the attendance of the students. Again, so that was at the recommendation of a middle school principal. Four instances in which a child would transfer from out of state and the records didn't come, you know, the committee may want to consider just going to the current year on that.
Representative Carlson.
Now, Chair, how would you handle the situation? Before I retired, I was in a high school with a large immigrant population, and we were getting a number of students from Liberia. By the time I retired, Liberia had been in a civil war at that point for 3 years, and the school had been, by and large, closed. So we would get students high school age old enough to drive an automobile. I'll put note in English speaking, so you know there would be a fairly easy transition in that regard for many of them. But they hadn't had an educational opportunity because the school was closed, so therefore no attendance record. One way or the other.
Right, and there's another, excuse me, Madam
Mr.
Chair,
Marcus.
Committee. There's another example where a student is transferring in, and if in the current year we don't have records to show that the student is neglecting their attendance duties, that, you know, you would go by what the school has rather than what they did back in Liberia. It's a very good example.
Thank you. Mr. Marcus, our next witness is Roger Aronson, followed by Richard Neumeister.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Roger Aronson. I'm counsel for the Minnesota Elementary and Secondary School Principals Association. We have some concerns about the bill. This bill is started out as an idea, and as we've tracked it through for the last couple of days, and as Mr. Meeks referenced as well and the other witnesses, I think Representative Johnson's done a lot of work on this. Every time a question's been raised, we got a different draft. We think this is the fourth draft that we've looked at with various ideas. I want to suggest a couple of the problems. that we think exist as the result of this. Attendance is important. No one denies that. Everyone agrees to that, and we want to do everything that we can to get kids to come to school. This bill and this particular configuration is going to do a couple of things that we don't think typically you'd like to do. One is we're going to have to do 80,000 attendance certificates annually. We may have new technology if that's the case. We may do those electronically, but every student who wants to get a driver's license will have to have some form of attendance certificate. Whether they're in a public school or a private school, that certificate is either going to say I attended or I attend a school that doesn't require me to comply with this particular statute. It's going to require us to do some additional attendance data when kids move on open enrollment purposes. The reason that this bill has become now voluntary rather than mandatory is the cost. And the estimates when it was Representative Biernat's bill a few years ago were somewhere, as I recall, between $4 and $6 million for its implementation throughout the state. Mr. Meek says, refers to the cost of running these hearings and that the lawyers are involved. Frankly, you could say an estimate of somewhere between $500 to a couple $1,000s to do some of these hearings. You had questions about attendance committees. What those committees do in their local policy, the extent that we have attendance policies that say if you miss, you won't get credit for the class, which is a very common sort of practice that we have in schools. We run a lot of those hearings when kids are going to lose credit for those classes. People come to those. We expect for driver's licenses. We will be hearing a lot of the same arguments that it really wasn't an unexcused absence. I was caught behind the train. I was sick, whatever it might be. And we will spend a lot of time in districts where we adopt these policies because the stakes are high for kids to lose their driver's licenses. Because of that, if the bill was passed in its current form, our recommendation would be that school districts not adopt this policy. It's very complicated to implement. It takes an awful lot of time. It's very expensive. One of the things that we did visit with the Hennepin County Attorney's Office about the juvenile code, and currently juvenile judges can revoke the licenses of truants. There is a problem in that standard, and that's would to be addressed by another committee, but we think that you could fix that there, that that's a good place to do the hearings. And finally, let me say, in our discussions before the legislative session started, this issue was very important, and we, our representatives met with representatives from the department, from the governor's office, and from Department of Public Safety as well. The reason these hearings are in schools rather than the Department of Public Safety is they were far too expensive. Public Safety didn't want to do these hearings or the requests for waivers. So we view this as very expensive for the people that want to implement it. If there was money attached to this, if we said, hey, this is a good enough initiative, it's going to make this huge difference, so we're going to fund it, we'd be very excited about it. But in the fashion in which it lies, this is going to cost us some money, and we don't have the money to do it, Madam Chair. In response to one of the questions that was asked to Mr. Meeks, there are timelines on the hardship waiver process that's in here. It does not say, the bill doesn't say what the consequence of violating those timelines is. If the child comes in and requests the hardship waiver and we don't process it pursuant to the timelines, does that mean he or she automatically gets the waiver, or does it mean that they don't get the waiver? And those are the consequences and implementation pieces that we see out there. It doesn't say. We would argue that they wouldn't get the waiver if we violated the timelines, but we are always take that position, so that's how that would happen. But you know, to the extent that you folks establish these timelines and say you have to process this within this particular set of days, compliance generally sometimes is looked at us as a default sort of deal that the waiver would be granted. So that's our thoughts on the bill, Madam Chair. I'd answer any questions that you might have.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In response to the points that Mr. Aronson is raising, Mr. Marcus or Representative Johnson, in the experience of other states, Florida or others that you are aware of, have there been extensive costs? Is there a great increase in paperwork in working through this process? What have you found?
Madam Chair,
Committee. Mr. Marcus.
If I could just speak to that in kind of a summary fashion by quoting from the Education Commission of the States, Accountability Rewards and Sanctions, this is dated back in 1996, but here's their statement. Back in 1996, mind you, not so many states had done this yet, but here's what they had to say. Although there are no hard statistics on their effectiveness, no pass, no drive incentives seem to work primarily because 16-year-olds want to drive. The only expense, and it is minimal, associated with no pass, no drive incentives relates to the communication between schools and the state's motor vehicle department. Other dropout prevention programs require substantially more funds and often involve hiring additional staff and, in some cases, restructuring schools. So there's their statement. Certainly, to the extent that Florida, West Virginia, or any of those states would have found it, overly burdensome, and in the best interest of the state and the taxpayers to let the kids drop out as opposed to keeping them in school, I would suspect they would have over the course of the last decade or so that they've done it would have reversed themselves, but we have not seen that trend at this point. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Richard Neumeister.
Madam Chair, for the record, my name is Rich Neumeister. The way the bill is as presented, I think, is not a good bill. In order for it to go forward, I would like to make some suggestions and then give some just general philosophy of how to improve the bill.
This bill is going to civil law next, Mr. Neumeister.
Goes forward. First of all, be very specific on the bill. First of all, I think as an equity issue, it should include everybody, every student. And for political reasons or not, the issue is, I look at it just in a general equal protection, equity type issue. The other question that should be asked is, what do the other states do? What do the other 18, 19 states do? And I'm going to refer to that, but I can refer to other things because I've done some research on some other states. For example, the whole definition of what is on page 12, lines 2, 3, and 4, if you miss one or more class periods on 7 days, so if I miss my science class that I can't stand the teacher and he calls me this or that or there's an issue there, so I miss that particular class period out of those many days, I would then be considered truant, therefore the machinery starts to go in. What some other states do, Louisiana does 10 full days, Kentucky does 9 whole days, Ohio does 15 whole days, based on a 1996 article that I found. So I would encourage you to take a look rather than, a whole day kind of an approach rather than. On page 36, line 11, again, the machinery is going to be clicking in. So depending on your definition of when a young person is truant or because maybe they may not get a notice because it's not in Spanish, so then the parents who get the notice don't understand it when they get to English, and then someone is denied their license. I say, rather than must, put may in there. If you're going to allow this option, if you're going to go the option to the school districts, allow the option then of the individual person to whether or not they wish to do things. Because it's important then, okay, let's say a couple times Neumeister has been truant, or he's been expelled, or something. There might be personal reasons why. Let the school district try to work that out and other kinds of things rather than a mandatory kind of thing take place, and I don't see that there. One of the things that we talk about are number of days, and on page 10, line 8, I wouldn't mind seeing when the DPS turns that notice to me as a parent. Sometime in the future, who knows? I get 20 days. Because maybe I get the hearing notice now, 20 days. Hey, there's some issues here. Again, depending on the definition of what you have is what triggers the truancy, at least the truancy aspect. And even the expellment, I guess that varies too. But the point is that it gives some time and some room. Now, just generally on a philosophical point, because philosophically it's important to look at this bill and this process. We are aware that there are studies to where there are apt to be more young people of poverty, and communities of color that are detention, that are suspended, and all those kinds of things. So when I see that happening, I wonder what will be the impact in terms of folks who lose their driver's license, their driver's licenses. One of the other things I think is important to say in the law, because again, if you're going to make this local option, I'm very familiar on a local option level, they don't do all the things. And it's apparent upon the state to make sure that there is, if you're going to go with this format, that there be equity as best as you can. That it be stated in their handbook rights for that students gets every year, because that will be an option, that this is this new procedure, this new law. That it be in foreign languages, particularly in urban areas, that notices that be sent be in foreign languages. That records should be kept on the detention and the dismissal and all those kinds of things, so you can do a look back in that regard. One of the things that I go back to a Star Tribune article on October 15th, 2003. It said in the story, the proposal says that even students, this is when Governor Pawlenty, are old enough at 16 to legally leave school without losing driving privileges if they drop out. So with students who are absent more than 20% of the time during a quarter, semester, or school year. So even from, at least publicly, it has changed somewhat to where it's more narrower. So, Madam Chair and members of the committee, I have at least brought up some, I think, very important points. Issues of due process, I think, are there. I think there's issues of equity that are there. I think there are issues of look back to make sure that you're going to do this, it's held accountable, and also for more flexibility. As Governor Pawlenty says, we want a hook for accountability. But if you're going to do a hook for accountability, it needs to be fair. FAIR.
Thank you, Mr. Neumeister.
Members of the committee, those are my points.
Thank you, Mr. Neumeister. Are there any questions for Mr. Neumeister? All right, seeing none, is there any further discussion? Oh, I'm sorry, Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is to the author of the bill. I note that one of the changes, Representative Johnson, has to do with the public safety notification. I'm having a hard time tracking this, but it has to do with the manner and format of the information that needs to flow between schools and DPS. And in the original bill, there was requirement for the providing of MARS numbers, Social Security numbers, and I know this question will probably come up in civil law because I think we're talking about privacy issues here. And I note that in the amendment you dropped those particular provisions. And so I guess I have a two-part question. One is it the author's intent to not wander back into the provision of MARS numbers and Social Security numbers between those two? And then my second question has to do with the language that says Department of Public Safety electronically in a manner and format prescribed by the department shall include, and then there's a list. Is that meant to be all-inclusive, or are we handing over to the Department of Public Safety sort of a blank check, so to speak, in terms of adding, additional requirements of our schools?
Madam Chair, I'm going to ask Ms. Willenbring to come forth too, but there has been a lot of talk actually in the last few days regarding federal data privacy issues, and that's how we came up with this much shorter list, and I think you've kind of been in the middle of that.
Madam Chair, Representative, my understanding from the Department of Education is that there are some limitations on what they can share on student data under federal regulation, and perhaps Mr. Marcus can speak to that. Regarding the open check to the Department of Public Safety, that's all the information that we would need. We would prefer to get the Social Security number so we could make sure that we were identifying absolutely the correct student, but that's something that currently is prohibited under federal law. and so at this time we are not able to receive that. We already have the Social Security number for drivers. It's required when you apply for a license. But that's why with the name and date of birth and an address, we feel that we should be able to narrow it down sufficiently that if we have a question between two drivers, then we can check back with the school.
So, then, Madam Chair, on that point, so then
Representative Mariani.
The language here from the department's view is meant to be all-inclusive in terms of what you'll be requiring in the format that you'll be presenting to the schools.
Madam Chair, Representative
Ms.
Yes.
Willingbring.
Yes, that's correct.
Thank you.
Okay. Representative Latz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Johnson, I think I may have caught a technical error in the drafting of the bill. I want to call your attention to see if I'm accurate.
Okay.
On page 9, lines 1 and 2, line 1 has the word not right after the first word is, and it seems to me it should be on the second line after the word is, after absence is not excused.
Yes. Madam Chair?
That already...
Are you a lawyer?
Representative Latz, I think Lisa Larson had brought this to our attention. Representative Johnson, do you have before you what you would, the technical correction you would like to make?
Yes. You and Ms. Larson are the two smartest people in the room because you both caught this. And she suggested a change.
We're just nitpickers,
though. Which makes sense. On page 9. So I'd like to move, two things, Madam Chair, to kind of clean this up.
Go ahead, Mr. Johnson.
On page 9, line 1, delete the word not and replace it with the word a. So is a truant. Then delete all of line 2. Delete all of line 3 through the last comma. So the word has will still remain on that line. And delete on line 4 the words a public school, comma, SAAP, comma, or charter. So it would read, is a truant under section 260C.007, comma, subdivision 19, has not withdrawn from school under section 120A, etc. I think that solves the problem. But I believe Ms. Larson pointed out, and then I had to leave because someone asked a question, that we might have the same issue on page 11. Is that correct, Ms. Larson?
Ms. Larson.
Madam Chair, members, thank you, Representative Johnson. It's very similar, but not quite the same. In the drafts, I think the authors were interested in making the language as simple as possible. And Rich Neumeister referred to this question about unexcused absences and so forth. And on the change that Representative Johnson just mentioned on page 9, we've cross-referenced the definition of truant. And perhaps it would, to be consistent, it would be advisable also on page 12 to do the same thing. So on page 12, on line 2, if you would delete after and insert when, and then delete also on line 2, has an unexcused absence from school 1, so the remainder of that line. Delete line 3, and on page 12, line 4, delete except when, and insert, is truant under section 260C.007, subdivision 19, unless... Unless, and then it would say the on line 4, and after the insert, school waived the. So it would read, when the child is truant under section 260C.007, subdivision 19, unless the school waived the attendance requirement, etc., waive the attendance requirement under section 171.056, and then delete the remaining portion of that sentence through line 7. So it should read, the school must notify the Department of Public Safety to cancel the child's driving privileges under section 171.056 when the child is truant under Section 260C.007, Subdivision 19, unless the school waived the attendance requirement under Section 171.056.
Okay. Is that perfectly clear to everyone?
Mm-hmm.
Representative Johnson, do you wish to move your amendment?
I do, Madam Chair.
Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That amendment has been adopted. Thank you, Representative Latz and Ms. Larson, for noticing that correction. Representative Latz, do you have another one?
Just a suggestion. I don't know if the Representative Johnson was going to address some of the issues that were raised by Bob Meeks. Some of the issues, I wasn't entirely comfortable with the Department of Education's explanation regarding the preceding school year. It leaves an awful lot of discretion in the department's hands without any guidance in statute. So I was going to suggest on page 8, on line 18, after the word preceding, we indicate something like when available.
Madam Chair? It's me.
Representative Johnson.
Madam Chair, Representative Latz, what a coincidence, because I was going to suggest essentially the same thing, a little different. If I could suggest one more amendment, Madam Chair, on page 8.
Is this purely pretty much technical amendment also, Representative Johnson?
It is. Well,
right.
It kind of is. line 18, after the word and, insert to the extent the person's attendance records are available, comma.
Actually, that could go at the end of the sentence, too. It could go either place. Why don't I ask Ms. Larson, where would it be best, do you think?
Madam Chair, Representative Johnson, may I suggest that perhaps it might be better to put it at the end of the sentence, because you otherwise, by putting it after current, you would presume that the records for the current year in every case would be available, and if the kid transferred, for example, in the middle of the school year, that may or may not be true.
Okay, that's a good point.
All right, so at the end of that sentence, we would add to the extent available, correct? All right. I would move that amendment. Is that all right, Representative Latz? Representative Latz moves this amendment. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Amendment is adopted. All right, are there further questions on this bill? Representative Latz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I did have one other on page 9, Mr. Meeks raised the question about a school administrator reversing an expulsion, and I don't know how exactly that process works, but I haven't heard anyone respond to that concern. I wonder if someone who's more familiar with the expulsion process and its reversal could address that.
Madam Chair.
Representative Biskins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Watts, as Mr. Meeks brought that up, I decided to look at what the devil he's talking about, and I believe Mr. Meeks, and I'll give him deference because he did mention that he was looking at this on the fly, but I believe he read that out of context, all right? This bill, as I read it, does not give a school administrator the ability to reverse an expulsion. Okay. And there is no such permission granted within this bill, and if you read it in the points in its order, all right, you'd see that it doesn't give that permission at all.
Madam Chair.
Representative Johnson.
Ms. Larson actually had suggested some language to clean this up, too, and I kind of shooed her away because I didn't want to deal with any more amendments. But since you brought it up, Representative Latz, maybe if she has a suggestion to clean this one up, too, we ought to hear from her and get her done.
First of all, does this need cleaning up, Ms. Larson?
Madam Chair, members, you may want to ask the individuals who work with schools and student dismissals. I chatted briefly with several of them up there, and there seems to be some modest assertion that dismisses as opposed to reverses would have less problematic word, and also if we indicated that it was at the direction of the school board, which initiates the hearings in the first place. So, for example, one possibility might be to say a school administrator at the direction of the school board dismisses. So on page 9, line 26, delete reverses and insert, comma, at the direction of the school board, comma, dismisses.
Representative Johnson, did you wish to make that change?
Yes, ma'am.
Is there any further discussion of this proposal, of this proposed amendment? It's on page 9. We'll make sure we have it. So page 9, line 26 would read, a school administrator at the direction of the school board dismisses. And you would line out reverses. All right. Is there any discussion on this amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Amendment is adopted. All right, are there any further questions for any of our witnesses or for the author of the bill, Representative Dabney?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Johnson, I don't have the page in front of me, but my understanding is that this would apply to unexcused absences.
That's right, Madam Chair, Representative Dabney, that's right. I think it's absences without excuse.
Thank you. Madam Chair, Reverend Johnson, do we provide in this bill then a consistent state definition of what unexcused absence is? Because I know in the real world, often a school district's policy is absences are excused by a doctor's note, by this, that, and whenever the parent says it's okay, at which point often the very kids and the very families we most need to reach with an initiative like this, as long as parents, and I get the parental rights issue, but as long as you've got the parents who aren't on the ball allowed to continue to keep the kid off the ball, we've got different standards for different kids in different districts going on across the state, and we're not getting to the very families that we need to get to. Is there a consistent statewide standard being established in this bill for those kids and families?
Madam Chair, Representative Dabney, no, there isn't. I don't believe there's a definition for this in the statute from which we took the language either. The philosophy has been, let's leave it up to each district and administration to do that. And I completely recognize your concern, but I'm still more comfortable leaving that at the local level.
All right. I have no one else who has requested a question, so I believe, Representative Johnson, if you would like to renew your motion, we are actually ready to vote.
I would renew my motion to pass this bill as amended several times.
All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Amendment passed. Pardon me, the bill is passed.
Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Representative Segrin.
You may want to say where it's going next.
Oh, yes, it was going to civil law. That was in the original motion. I'm sorry. Next would be Carla Nelson, the reading record.
Madam Chair.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Chair Sikora. And members, I just think as the ethics chair, I need to remind all of us to be respectful, in this case, of all students, whether they attend public or private or are homeschooled. There was a remark made by Representative Dabney, I think that alluded to our Catholic students attending, those who attend Our Lady of Perpetual Homework. That is not respectful.
Madam Chair.
Representative Dabney.
If I may clarify the intent of that point to the Chair Erickson, my point was that a student could make up an imaginary private school that they were going to as a way to avoid being held responsible for their attendance. It was not intended as a slam against private schools. It was more an allusion to the creativity of some students who wish to avoid responsibility in school attendance. And I apologize if it was taken in the wrong way.
Madam Chair, I accept that apology. However, using Our Lady is pretty specific. Thank you.
Thank you. Members, well, Ms. Nelson is preparing to carry your bill. I wanted to remind you that tomorrow morning, Capital Conversations is in the Judiciary Building, and it will center around programs for after-school type time. The extended day type of issues is my understanding of what the issue would be tomorrow, and I would encourage people to attend because that does affect programs that we get concerned about here. All right, Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to move House File 2007 be recommended to pass and sent to the General Register, and I do have a small author's amendment.
All right, Representative, what is your amendment?
The amendment is A04-0935, and it just adds some clarification, inserting the words each year on page 1, line 14, before the period. And at the end of the bill, it just inserts, each school must use the state-developed reading record form to ensure conformity, to facilitate use of the reading record by all teachers, particularly when a student transfers to a new school or district. Just clarification.
All right. Are there any questions about the author's amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor of Amendment 0935, please signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? The amendment is adopted. Please now go through your bill, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I know that each one of us in this room knows the importance of the ability to read. It's the major foundational skill for all school-based learning and most of what we do in life, whatever that may be. And we also know that it is in those early elementary years where those foundational blocks, and it's just critical that students become readers during those early years. And in case, just for the record, should some not be convinced, I'd like to just give you some statistics. 88% of poor readers in first grade have the probability of being poor readers in fourth grade. 75% of children who are poor readers, who are not helped prior to age 9, will continue to have difficulties through high school. 10 to 15% of children who have difficulties learning to read will drop out of school. Only 2% will complete a four-year college program. And we just visited about the importance of not only completing high school, but further preparation as well. Half of adolescents and young adults with criminal records have reading difficulties. And I'd like you to let that soak in. Half of youths with histories of substance abuse have reading problems. So it is a key thing that we make sure that our students get the help that they need so they can be successful readers at an early age. The statistics make it very clear why we need to emphasize literacy by grade 3. So the bill that I have introduced simply asks districts to include a reading record in the permanent educational record of students grades K through 3. And my own experience as a reading specialist, I can tell you I had a student who came to see me as a second grader in March, and I was his fifth teacher in that school year. So we know that mobility is a problem. While we can't keep kids in one place, we can make it easier for them when they do transfer to schools by taking this reading record with them. Here's a little bit of how the program will work. The Department of Education, working together with districts, principals, elementary principals, and teachers, would develop a permanent record template so it would be practitioner-driven. Record would contain information on strengths and weaknesses, phonemic awareness, other early reading indicators, and the form would be available on the Minnesota Department of Ed website. The districts could download this document off of the website and complete it and put it with each child's academic record. It would follow the students as they go from school to school, either in the same district or in other districts. And obviously, we believe it would be valuable for many reasons. We know about mobility. We also know how timely it is to get that diagnostic reading information. Much of it is done on a one-on-one basis, and so it would make a lot of sense if the child could bring that record with him as he moves to a new teacher or a new school. The end, it would be best for students. It would help ensure that we have proficient readers. And we stand for questions.
Are there any questions for Representative Nelson and her bill? Representative Krenke.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Nelson, why do we, number one question is, why do we need to put this issue in statute? And number two, this looks very much like rulemaking for the department.
Well, I think there's...
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The reason that we're putting it in statute is twofold. One, the fact of the matter is many schools have something similar to this already, that when students move from first grade to second grade, the first grade teachers of a particular school have developed a reading record that moves with the students. But having it on the department website, which is downloaded, there will be some consistency so that so we can address that mobility factor. So when students move to either new buildings or new districts, the information that we have about where they are in their reading progress is not lost. And I cannot speak to the rulemaking, but perhaps Dr. Nelson can.
Ms. Nelson.
Madam Chair, Representative Krenke, the department fully understands that we do not have rulemaking authority. When we are presented with a statute, we follow the statute as closely as we can. So we would follow exactly what it says, a common format. I might also specify with input from school districts, I would envision elementary principals and teachers. And frankly, I called a couple of elementary principals about this to ask about the level of common format, if that would be helpful, and the feedback was very much so. But if we're going to be able to use this across school districts and especially design it with the input of teachers and principals, that this would be seen as a very helpful tool.
Representative Growling. I'm sorry, Representative Krenke, were you finished?
Madam Chair, if I could just continue. I didn't really feel like either of those answered my question. Number one, we already have information that is contained in the student's permanent academic record. So why do we need to put in statute that this addition of a reading record? You could just go through rulemaking process and say, in addition to the academic record that is already there, that this reading analysis or reading screening process would take place. That's my, again, my reason is that I understand you can put in statute. The reason is why put it in statute when you already have other rules containing what the academic record contains and doesn't contain. The second question is set on line 17, 18. The commissioner, with input from school districts, must develop the form and content of the reading record. That sounds a lot like rulemaking to me, particularly when you say that each school must then use the state-developed reading record. That sounds, as I said, an awful lot like rulemaking. And the reason we go through rulemaking is so that all of the schools that have to participate have an opportunity to see what the published requirements and standards are, have an opportunity to comment on them, have an opportunity to object if they so choose, rather than us deciding here in a matter of a few minutes that somebody should go do this.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Chair Sikora. Let me address that first question again, Representative Krenke, and that is that the CUME folder does not contain the detailed information that we're requesting here, which has to do specifically with reading strengths and weaknesses. So this is in addition to what is in the CUME folders. Some districts may include this information, some may not. My guess is that all districts have this information and transfer it amongst their teachers. We're just asking that this information go with the student, when be put in the record so it goes with the student. The diagnostic information is not lost and not left at the school that the child is leaving.
Representative Nelson, perhaps you might want to give a couple of examples of the kind of information that might be part of the reading
yes,
card?
Yes, yes. Reading records oftentimes include diagnostic information that has been ascertained on a one-to-one time between the teacher and the student. There may be a phonemic awareness where the record lists which elements of the phonics or digraphs or whatever the student has mastered. It might also list what strengths or weaknesses are present. Many basal reading programs also have diagnostic information in there as far as possible reading levels or maybe significant sight words that are learned. So there's a lot of different, and those are the things that the shareholders will be developing. I'm just giving you some examples from my experience. And it would be a travesty to leave that information. It would be like every time a patient goes to a doctor, they don't take any records with them. And we redo all the tests. And so I just think it would be a shame to not have that information follow the student.
Madam Chair, to that point.
Representative Seifert.
Madam Chair, Representative Krenke, for the department to use rulemaking, and I've studied this ad nauseum to the point where it sickens me sometimes, but it's very expensive and cumbersome to do rulemaking, A. B, if they would, we cleaned up that law 2 years ago where we have to specifically give the department authority under Chapter 14 to do a rulemaking or amend their rules, which triggers the expensive, long process of doing it. I think they're trying to do it on line 17, saying with the input from the school districts. I don't know if that's going to gather what you want on finding the form that's going to fit for everyone. I'm just trusting the department would use that input. And actually, under rulemaking, they can kind of do what they want anyway. The school districts can object, but there's really no formal way of stopping once it's started. So I actually prefer this method if we are going to do it one way or another, because of my my dealings with rulemaking with various departments, this probably would actually be a better way of doing it. But if you know someone wants to give them Chapter 14 authority, it would have to go to GovOps, and it would probably end up containing a fiscal note at that point as well. Or I'm assuming the department is going to internally absorb this at this point.
Madam Chair, Representative.
Dr. Nelson.
On the issue of rulemaking, if it's really up to the committee, I am not learned enough to be able to advise you with respect to what you want to give as far as rulemaking authority to the department. But I will say that another option is that the department, with input from schools, develops a format and we put it on the web and it becomes optional for schools. The idea is to try to have something that is usable, that doesn't require a lot of interpretation, and understand we have many different reading programs used across the state. So we want to accommodate teachers who use this information, much like a doctor uses a chart of information. And this information is not typically in a CUME record. Very much not so. So this would be very much an improvement, I think, for teachers of reading.
All right, Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Like Representative Seifert, I have studied rulemaking ad nauseum, too. I haven't served on GovOps for a while, but I absolutely agree with Representative Krenke that there's a lot of debate in the national rulemaking things, which were so exciting that I used to go to when I was the chair of this subcommittee, that a good way to get around rulemaking is to go to, you know, this sort of thing by forms or directives or guidelines, when really they are rules and people should, all parties should have input on it. So while I think it's a very good idea to have schools, students have their reading records travel with them and not lose any time, I also philosophically think, and I'm surprised Representative Seifert, who studied this, also wouldn't know that a way to get around rulemaking is to put it in a form or guidelines or something like that. And the reason for rulemaking is not to spend a lot of time or spend a fortune, but it's to give all parties notice and so forth. So, Representative Nelson, if you took Assistant Commissioner Nelson's advice and made it an optional form that was on the web, I don't think that would require rulemaking. But if it's going to be required and everyone would use a uniform form, you could use the expedited rulemaking process, which doesn't take, if it's not controversial, rulemaking can be quite simple.
I'll defer to Dr. Nelson on whether we want to do the expedited rulemaking or if quite frankly, I think this is something that school districts will want to do because it makes good sense for the students' academic progress. So if we want to make it an optional form, in other words, the districts can include whatever reading record they want, but we will provide an optional form, that would be fine too. And you can address which way would be best.
Mr. Marcus, did you wish to address or Ms. Nelson?
Madam Chair, if it's appropriate, at this time I'd like to say if the committee would really like to consider the element of House File 1789 that gave the Department general rulemaking authority, I think you'd find that the Department was willing to engage in that discussion with you, and then, of course, we wouldn't have to have any authority of this nature because we'd have general rulemaking authority.
So thank you for your consideration of that point. Yes. Okay, Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Nelson, the cumulative files that follow students now, is that in statute or is that rulemaking?
I'm speaking as a superintendent, Madam Chair, Representative. I'm speaking now as a former superintendent. I don't recall that it is in statute. I have to be very honest. I believe it's sort of a basic practice procedure of school districts, and at the very minimum, it's report card grades and any official statewide or school district-wide assessments that are put into that CUM record. Each local district does, on occasion, make decisions locally to insert other pieces of information into that cumulative record. Special education records are treated differently, but going back to what's in the student record, my experience has been mostly just student grades. When it comes to reading instruction, that is not particularly helpful. This detailed screening would be much more helpful.
Representative Seifert, to that point.
Well, Madam Chair, on the point of rulemaking, we had a lot of concerns. This was actually from the Commerce Department, where they were doing the bulletins and the guidelines and then claiming they were rules and going after business people. So in 2001, I carried a bill that most people here probably don't care about or know about, but since the GovOps people hear this all the time, I just thought I'd mention this. In the law was signed in 2001 by Ventura, it states very clearly, a person may petition the Office of Administrative Hearing seeking an order of an administrative law judge determining that an agency is enforcing or attempting to enforce a policy, guideline, bulletin, criterion, manual, standard, or similar pronouncement as though it were a duly adopted rule. And then it goes on and talks about that a department cannot, under the guise of a guideline, bulletin, form, etc., say this is a rule. And so what we tried to do was address the concerns that were brought up with this rulemaking reform that we did a couple years ago. And so that's a protection for the parties that are having to deal with these types of things. I don't know if that answers the questions that people were interested in, but I don't think it ever been a complaint against the education department, but the Commerce Department were sending business people manuals and then saying, oh, well, the statute said that we could do this form and we're going to go after you, and so we cleaned it up with this particular statute.
Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Seifert. That's why I think if this were a mandatory form, it would fall maybe under the protection of your law, but rather head that off and not have to have something clamped down on it. I see you do understand it.
Do the optional thing.
Do the optional thing. Or if it is going to be a mandated required form, which I have no objection to, just let everybody have input in it through an expedited rulemaking process, one or the other. I actually think if it were uniform, it would be more useful.
Representative Quinkey, did you have another comment or question?
Well, Madam Chair, committee members, again, I think that the difficulty that I see here is that in the amendment that was adopted to House File 2007 is that each school must use the state-developed reading record. And again, we're talking about something that is in the student's permanent academic record. So I think, again, that this raises a lot of issues when you start saying that the department is going to develop these standards and the screening process, and then every school district, and then, of course, every student is going to be subject to those same screening processes and standards. I don't think that, again, this is something that, this is what Representative Seifert, this is what rulemaking process was for. Not for the legislature to find a way around rulemaking, but when you have something that is going to be mandated for every student, K through 3, and in every school in the state, this is what you have rulemaking process for, no matter how expensive it is. So that's my my 2 cents worth, Madam Chair.
Representative Nelson.
Thank you, Chair Sikora. Well, in order to, even though the expedited rulemaking may be a possibility, in order to save dollars and still get what we think will be best for students accomplished here, I'd like you to consider a oral amendment, which I think will address the concerns. And if you will look on line 13, after the words reading indicators, period, insert the following words, please. A school must record a student's reading progress in, and then you're going to delete, after the period after reading indicators, you're going to delete the reading record must be included. So delete that. And so what line 13 will read, it will read as this. Line 13, reading indicators, period. A school must record a student's reading progress in, line 14, the student's permanent academic record. And we have already added the words each year. And we will be deleting the second part of the amendment, which we adopted at the end of line 18. So I see puzzled looks there. So delete the words we added after line 18 in the oral amendment. Delete on line 13 the words the reading record must be included. And insert, after reading indicators, a school must record a student's reading progress in. Okay. So would you like to hear the whole thing one more time?
I think
not
so.
Not really.
Okay.
Does anybody want to hear this again? Don't we want to hear this at least a dozen times?
Okay. One more time?
One more time.
Okay. Line 13. Reading indicators, period. A school must record a student's reading progress in the, and then we're on to line 14, student's permanent academic record each year.
All right, so this replaces,
okay.
The expert, Lisa Larson, says this is just fine. Did you have a comment to that point, Representative Erdahl or Greiling, to this amendment?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Nelson, essentially, is this saying that this would be then be included in their CUME folder?
Yes. There will be a reading record included in the CUME folders. Districts certainly will have the option to choose something off the website, which will contain continuity for children as they move from district to district or building to building. However, districts will also have the option to include their own reading record, whatever they choose that to be.
All right, one more comment, Representative Bradley, and then we're going to vote.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mine is actually, I could be after the amendment, but I could fit it in here too. Representative Nelson, the last line 18, I think if you're going to be consistent with what you're doing, rather than must develop the form and content, you might want to say must develop a sample form and content. But actually, I would urge you to reconsider your amendment and go stick with your uniform form, because I think you're weakening your bill. If you put this amendment on, then you really haven't done much, because I think most districts, if not all districts, already do this. It's more a problem with getting the records on time and so forth. But I think
your original idea of having a uniform form that, you know, would teachers wouldn't have to decipher and translate would be a much bigger service to the reading progress of our students. So I'm saddened that you're weakening your bill here.
Quite honestly, Ms. Larson, why don't you just make the statement you just made to me?
Madam Chair, members, the language in various forms we've used quite frequently when we draft grant programs, directions to develop model policies, and so on and so forth. And it's a direction to the commissioner, or in some cases the department, to develop the form and content of the proposal, the grant, the record, what have you. And ordinarily, as I understand it, what happens is the commissioner does this thing, and it becomes the thing. There aren't variations. There aren't multiple versions. It's the form. It's language that we've used very, very often for all kinds of things when we want a single document to be used for a particular purpose.
So, in other words, you don't need rulemaking to do this. This is... Representative Grilling.
Thanks, Madam Chair. Well, then, if that's the case, I'm comforted that you wouldn't be weakening the bill because all the flock out there would use it anyway, even though we're not mandated. But to be consistent, then, I would ask you to consider on line 18, must develop a sample form rather than the form, because I think it's otherwise at odds with the voluntary nature of the rest of the now soon-to-be-amended bill.
I'll make that as an amendment. That's... Must develop a form.
Mm-hmm. Or just eight. A form? No, a sample.
A sample. Strike the word the in line 18. Insert a sample.
Right.
And can I just add something, Madam Chair?
Yes, we're running out of time, though, Representative Nelson.
Representative Grilling is exactly right. The strength of this is in the continuity. If we really want to help kids with mobility issues and... But we don't want to spend extra dollars doing so. But I think common sense will prevail, and I would hope for continuity here.
All right. All those in favor of the amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Amendment is adopted. As a former teacher, I think this would be extremely helpful. So I really like this for that reason, because you don't really know where your kids are at immediately when they come to you. All right. Seeing no other discussion... All those in favor of the bill as amended, and it's going to Ed Finance, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
There is no fiscal note, so it doesn't need to go to Ed Finance. It should go right to the General Register unless I'm missing something.
Would you like it to go right to the General Register?
Yes, that was my original motion.
So is that your original motion?
Yes.
I'm sorry, I misunderstood. Okay, this is going to the General Registry. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Bill number 2007 has passed.
Madam Chair.
Congratulations.
Two today. Only one left for the afternoon. Representative Dabney.
Just like to remind people tomorrow morning, if you think teachers' unions are a factor in public education and are looking for some challenging ideas on the roles of teacher unions, we've got an author, Julia Kopich, coming in at 8:30 tomorrow morning. You bring the coffee. I'll bring the treats, particularly if you let me know you're coming. It should be challenging whether you think teachers' unions play a positive or a less than positive role. Thank
Don't
you.
Forget Capitol Conversations tomorrow morning over in the Judiciary Building also. And remember, we come back tonight at 5:30 to this room.
This room?
It's out of school time, extended day type stuff. Okay, after school, all those kinds of things. Meeting is recessed until this afternoon.
5:30.
Back here. Jeez, gotta think before I speak. Okay.
Right.
And you don't have to make another 7 minutes.
Yeah, I know.
Okay, here's. I forgot to.
very different personalities, too.
When someone gets arrested for DWI, rather than one gets fired, they give the other one
The meeting will come back to order, please. We are no longer in recess. And as Mr. Wardlow gets, Representative Wardlow gets ready to present his bill, I'd like to call your attention to the minutes of Thursday, February 19th. Would anyone like to move those minutes?
So moved.
Representative Burrell moves the minutes. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Minutes are adopted, and take a look at the minutes also for Monday, February 23rd. And I heard an aye, somebody over here moving those, Representative Biskins. So if, will you take a look at February 23rd? We actually, I think, have the right people on this list. So are there any changes or corrections? Hearing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Minutes have been adopted. All right. Let's move on. Representative Wardlow. House file, we're trying to move this along, folks, so that you can all be out of here in a short time. Yeah. Representative Wardlow, are you ready?
No.
Madam Chair, this third revision we're having, I need to get some more clarification. I need about 2 minutes with the Vice Commissioner here. Is that
all right? We'll let everybody get a cookie.
What a family
have.
Yeah, Mike.
I probably don't want that on the record.
I think I already. Well, especially our consumption of the day, we're not supposed to be doing
that. Right.
When they're researching the legislative history on this bill,
could you actually check and see if they get
I can blame my vote.
You please should have tied by their chair.
For what?
It's a two-way defense, right?
For who?
The conjoined twins.
And I won't be making any Scandinavian mistakes with you.
So they have to get two different driver's licenses? How do they pass the test? One test or two?
Well, it's because of who's driving.
Why wouldn't they be able to drive?
Because of who's driving.
My family. Yeah, they just have one waist and hips. It's two legs. Two arms.
Over there.
Two heads, three. Two hearts, three lungs.
I have a
So could okay, but they only have reproductive.
Right?
But each of them get married.
At any rate,
different men have
political
convention.
No, I didn't. It was chocolate.
Everybody laughed. I thought
it was a lot of things.
Okay, fully informed and ready to move.
Representative Wardlow.
We can answer these questions.
Representative Wardlow, shall we bring your bill forward, please? I notice you have a delete everything amendment.
Yes, Madam Chair, could we speak to the amendment?
Well, let's move House File 2285 before the committee. And if passed, this will go to Education Finance, I believe.
Correct.
So then would you like to speak maybe to your bill and your amendment, or do you just want to speak to the amendment since that's... Okay.
The amendment is it's a delete all amendment.
Okay.
And it pretty much keeps the old bill the same. It just makes it a little cleaner and more concise. What this bill is going to do is it's going to tell the school districts to either retain a student or promote them. But what's new about this is if they promote them, they have to go to specialized
differentiated instruction, if they retain them, they also have to have differentiated instruction. Now, three things have to happen before they can be retained with differentiated instruction or promoted with the same. And that would be three things. They got to be in school 120 days, and they have to have been absent 20% of the time. That's number one. Number two, they have to be failing. Well, number two on this one now is achieve below grade level test scores and highly reliable statewide or district-wide assessments. And the third thing is that the school has determined that they haven't mastered the skills needed to go on to the next grade. Those three things have to happen concurrently. It's not either or, it's all of above. And if that happens, then the student will either be retained with differentiated instruction or promoted with differentiated instruction. And the reason the old bill didn't have that part about differentiated instruction if retained, because common sense, I think, would apply that if you're going to retain a kid, don't make them run the same rat wheel that they were doing before. Just give them some better instruction rather than just same old, same old. If the student is retained, then the student has the student's parent has 15 days to appeal to the school administrator, and also the student and the parent have to be advised in writing that they will be retained. And I know that in all school, every school I've ever taught in, even before that happens, there's always what they call midterms or something like that. Mm-hmm. And if we were required that if a student was getting a D or worse at midterm, the parent had to be notified that that was happening, in addition to the normal progress report that might have gone home at that time. So a special note was sent home saying your child is getting a D, might even fail if something doesn't change. And so that's not in this bill because we're leaving it to the local school districts to do that part on their own. A good principal will always ensure that their teachers are keeping the parents informed. And then, of course, at the end, a school district has to report by July 1st each year the number of students who will receive differentiated instruction, meaning either way, whether they're promoted or retained, they're receiving differentiated instruction. And the person I have with me on my left, her name is Wendy McNamee, and the reason she's here is she student taught for me, then she taught with me in mathematics, and then she became my principal at Dakota Hills Middle. And of course, this bill also has if you might notice, now it's K through 6. And it used to be K through 12, then it was K through 8, now it's K through 6. That's the last and final amendment. Representative from Rochester, I think.
Representative Nelson, I guess.
That was Dr. Nelson.
I just call you Rochester.
Would you like your witness to go ahead before there are questions?
I want to point out that when I asked her to testify to be a resource person, it was a K through 8 bill, and she's a middle school teacher, 6, 7, and 8. But she can answer some questions possibly, but they do at Dakota Hills have something called an ALC program, Learning Center, which does a lot towards the differentiated instruction for kids who are struggling. And if I may, I'd like her to explain to you what that does, just to show you some evidence that schools do have options to take care of kids who are failing but need to be promoted.
All right, Representative, before we go any further, shall we move your amendment, please?
Yes, please move my amendment. I move my amendment. What's it called?
Representative Wardlow moves.
Delta Echo 2.
DE2 amendment. Which is a delete everything amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Amendment is adopted. Representative Burrell, did you have a question about the amendment?
Yes, Madam Chair. I had a question about the amendment. I actually think I had an amendment to it,
but it's now
technical
his
in nature.
It's now his bill, so why don't we let the lady testify, and then, you know, we can go ahead after that. And is that McNamee?
Thank you. First of all, I'd like to say how pleased I am to be with you this afternoon, and I was pleasantly surprised. I see some old friends here as well, and Representative Biscuits and Dr. Nelson. We will work together at some point, yes. I think Representative Biscuits and I have put more than one math lesson plan together in our younger days. So I thank you for the opportunity to be here this afternoon. As Representative Wardlow described, when he first talked to me about this, the bill was K-8, and he'd asked me to speak to the middle school aspect of this bill. It has been amended, as you know, to K-6. And I had indicated him earlier today, I said, then why am I here? I don't know that perhaps they need someone that's more of an expert in the K-6 area. But one of the things that he wanted me to do is to talk, speak a little bit to the differentiated instruction and various models that might be in place. Certainly, differentiated instruction occurs within the regular ed classroom, where teachers modify and make changes to assignments and so forth to accommodate the various needs of students. When one is thinking about a student that is struggling academically to the point where retention is even a possibility, clearly that indicates a little more severe case. It's not a matter of this individual just doesn't understand how to find a common denominator. There's something more significant here. One of the things that concerns me as a principal, I think concerns all educators, is before we get to that point, I think we need to take a long look at why this student indeed is not being successful, and there can be a myriad of reasons and a combination of reasons. And I think we are wise to really look at the reasons for the failure in a very long and deliberate manner. One of the options that is offered at Dakota Hills Middle School in Eagan, and as well as other schools, we certainly are not the only school, is what is called the alternative learning plan. Certainly, there are many high schools that have alternative learning centers, and many times they are actually separate facilities that students would attend. In the case of most middle schools, we have a school within a school program, and the way, if I could just hand wave it a little bit for you, which really speaks to the differentiated instruction, the model is built on the fact that students will be attending a class that has fewer students, first of all. Maybe as few as 10 students. You certainly, typically, you would not want to see any more than 14 students in a classroom. And that is significantly less than most regular education classrooms by a number of students. So first of all, by having fewer students, this certainly allows the teacher to have more individualized attention, which I think is very, very critical to many students that struggle academically. The curriculum that typically is used within an alternative learning setting would be the same curriculum that is used in the regular education setting as well. So it is not like these students are using a completely different curriculum. If they are using this math book in regular seventh grade math, they will be using the very same book in the alternative learning center for seventh grade math. What may look a little different is the style in which it was taught, in which it is taught. And having fewer students certainly gives one the opportunity to have more hands-on kinds of activities, certainly more individualized attention, which I think probably is really important, and help many of these students who normally would struggle with organizational kinds of skills, and to help them in that area as well. So they receive, in essence, they receive the same education as any other student that is in any particular school. It is the instruction, however, is delivered a little bit differently and probably more in tune with this student's learning style, for example. So essentially, that's how the, and this, I should say, the school within school program really the focuses on the core subject of math, science, social studies, and language arts. For physical education, facts, and some of the electives, music, for example, they certainly would not be in a different class. They're in the same quiet class or band or whatever their choices are is all the other students.
Okay, Representative Burrell, did you have a question for the witness?
Madam Chair, I got another cookie. I'm okay.
You guys are going to be on a sugar high. We better get done here. all right, Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I wasn't going to say anything, but I'm on my third cookie now. I just have a few questions, please. Let's just say that all little buddies in the sixth grade, and numbers 1, 2, and 3, I mean, he doesn't do any of those things. He fails a test. I mean, now, he can either be promoted to the next grade, or he has differentiated instruction. Is that correct, or explain it to me, please.
Representative
Erdahl, whether he's promoted or not, he has to have differentiated instruction. If he's promoted, it's got to be to a different type of setting. It could be a classroom where the teacher is really focusing on his individual needs. If he's retained, same thing, because if you don't do the same thing when he's retained, then he's just repeating the same thing he did before, and he'll fail again.
Madam Chair.
Representative Erdahl.
So,
briefly.
he could fail at all those three items, but can he then be promoted and have differentiated instruction?
Yes, Madam Chair, yes.
Okay. Representative Burdall, does that take care of your question?
Sounds like social promotion to me, but I have no question.
Madam Chair?
Representative Wardlow.
In speaking with Dr. Nelson, I have a couple of oral amendments that maybe I should have done sooner.
You have a couple of oral? Are they tiny?
They're tiny.
If they are tiny, we will take an oral amendment. Thank you.
On the first page, line 9. This is just to make it more clear. After the word year, it says next school year, insert or not promote to the next grade level when the student in the current school year, etc. Just to make it clear that they can be retained or not.
All right. Is there, are there any?
And then in line 10, you should say then after Roman or after 1, before the word enrolled, put the student was enrolled.
You mean just in front of the enrolled, put a was?
Right, correct.
The student.
The student.
The student was, okay.
On the back.
Oh, my gosh. Another tiny?
It's all in the mind of the beholder. I think it's tiny.
I shouldn't have brought cookies. I can see that. Go ahead, Representative Wardlow.
Okay, line... It's going to be the same thing twice. Once in line 8, once in line 9. In line 8, cross out the word administrator. In fact, you probably could say school, but what, just say superintendent or charter school director. And in line 9, again, cross out administrator and say superintendent or charter school director.
All right, are there any questions about these? I believe Representative Latz has a question.
Madam Chair, I'm fly-specking here, and perhaps get some attorney advice on this. But on page 1, line 10, the proposed amendment, paragraph 1, the student was, I think you should just say was and will, not the student, because in line 9 it already refers to the student.
I agree.
Madam Chair?
I think that's correct, Representative.
Once again, Representative Latz is absolutely correct.
You're learning well.
All right. Is that the extent of your tiny amendments?
No, I have a real quick one now, Madam Chair. If you look at lines 17 through 20, the reporting part, in speaking with Dr. Nelson, it's another burden on the school district. Let's omit lines 17 through 20 and not make them report it. If we did make them report, you'd have to make sure the report was about the students that were retained. Those students who are getting differentiated instruction, I don't think it's that important to report to the state.
All right. Let's go back and make sure we've got these. Lisa Larson will. Ms. Larson, would you read it for us, or do you not have it? What I have is line 9. After a year, after next school year, or not promote, when the student in the school current school year 1 was, that word. So we've added or not promote on line 9 and was before enrolled on line 10.
Madam Chair, or not promote to the next grade level.
Oh, okay.
Madam Chair, can we read that? It doesn't make any sense.
Thank you, Ms. Fraser.
All right.
Madam Chair, if you feel, down, if you look at line 16, it says the obligation to provide differentiated instruction applies whether or not the student's retained in the same grade or promoted. That would imply that what we were concerned about was that the message that you could retain
was missing.
Is possible.
And you think it's there now, so we don't.
And the way the it was worded, we were just putting in or not promote up there to emphasize that that is an option. You know, if there's a better way to say it up there.
We need it.
If you feel we don't need it, then.
Madam Chair, may I speak?
Ms. Nelson.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, you had in front of you this morning a draft of the bill that had language that said very clearly to a school administrator, there is a choice available to the school. When a student has been gone and when a student is not doing well and when a student doesn't test well. And that choice was either to retain or not to retain or to promote to the next grade level. Coming to this hearing now, the language about retention has been removed. And so I think it's confusing for me, and I by reinstating those words, it goes back to the language that was there this morning. So it would read a public elementary school or a charter school enrolling students in any grade, kindergarten through grade 6, must provide a student with differentiated instruction in the next school year or not promote a student to the subsequent grade level when the student was enrolled. That goes back to the same language that was made, that was in your bill this morning. What I have noticed that has happened is the scope of the differentiated instruction. There's been language added, might I say, at the request of the MSBA that said they would be more comfortable if the scope of the differentiated instruction was up to the school. The other thing that was changed from this morning, if you think about it, who makes the decision? A school principal or someone in that position. Now, if the parent doesn't agree, who do they appeal to? It should be the person who supervises, and that's why the superintendent or charter school director is in there instead of a school administrator. So I believe with those changes, Madam Chair, that we've retained what you saw this morning, and I know there was a good faith effort to streamline and change it. It is my feeling, for whatever it's worth, but not having the word retention, I don't know why you'd call it a retention bill. All we're saying is if a student's having trouble, they get differentiated instruction. You see what I'm saying? The word retention gets missed.
Madam Chair.
Representative Segrin.
Madam Chair, I think Assistant Superintendent Nelson has a good point. The way it was written was just didn't flow or didn't make any sense. So if we can get the language clarified, I think you read something different than what we were given. So I don't know, maybe
Madam
Ms. Larson can help us with.
All right, the way it was read this last time around, and you know, let's move this along. We're going to be out of here in a very short time, folks. It says a public elementary school under section blah, 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 or a charter school enrolling students in any grade, kindergarten through grade 6, must provide a student with differentiated instruction in the next school year or not promote the student to the next grade level when the student in the current school year, 1, was enrolled in school for, blah, for you know, 2, 3. That all follows now, correctly?
That's correct.
Would you say, is that what you wanted? Okay.
That's correct, Madam Chair, but I think it could be worded better. And since we're going to the next committee with this, we
can
could
we
make that clean and fix it before we get there. Maybe the word retain should be used.
Madam Chair.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Chair Sikora. I hate to be causing a problem here, but I think if this is going to say what Representative Wardlow and those of us who have co-authored this bill want it to say, that either it moves out of here with necessary revision, because it is not reading, I don't think, the way, at least the delete all amendment,
no,
the way Representative Wardlow intends it to read, nor does it fulfill the obligation of what we think this bill is about. So it needs major revision. This is not good language.
Well, Representative Erickson, what are you suggesting?
Madam Chair, personally, I would lay the bill over and have it fixed. Thank you.
I mean, I certainly don't want to sit here and wordsmith for half an hour. On the other hand, we kept everybody here for this bill. And then we will still not be finished. So, Representative Wardlow, what is your desire?
Well, Madam Chair, I agree with Representative Erickson that we should maybe get the words right before we move it on.
Okay.
And I believe they're just about done doing that. Madam Chair, in concert with some advice, we made some changes that were going to make this cleaner, but the short time frame between caucus time and now is why we're
okay. In the meantime, Mr. Eastland, Representative Eastland has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just have one question, and it's probably technically right, but my right in line 5, it says when it calls it a public elementary school or a charter school enrolling grades or students in grades kindergarten through 6, an elementary school can in a lot of districts, middle schools have kids in that block, and I guess wouldn't it be almost make more sense just to say a public school and leave the elementary designation off so that it's
I think it just indicates here that it can be anything from grade kindergarten through 6.
But it says elementary in an elementary in statute. It says K through 6. And so a school that has 6 through 8.
All right.
Is that a?
All right, Representative Wardlow. I think we'll strike the word elementary in line 5. Just yes. Leave it a public school. All right.
So moved.
So now, where are we with your tiny amendment?
Shall I read it the way we are proposing here? For one more time, a public school, I'm on line 5, a public school under section 120A.05, subdivision 9, or a charter school enrolling students in any grade, kindergarten through grade 6, must provide the student with differentiated instruction in the next school year or not promote a student to the next grade level when, colon, and then number 1, the student was enrolled in the school, and the rest of it reads just the way it is. Line 16, 17, and 18 is new from this morning and addresses what Lisa has addressed as a concern. Representative Wardlow did not want, in the case of a retention, remember the decision, you either retain or you promote with differentiated instruction. His concern was that if you retain a student, he wanted to see an obligation for differentiated instruction. So that sentence is new. The obligation to provide it applies whether or not the student is retained in the same grade level or promoted.
Okay. And then on, so that is the extent of the changes on page 1, correct? And those are on line 5, deleting elementary, the new words that you added on line 9, and then on line 10 we say on line 9, and then on line 10 we say the student was enrolled,
yes.
Correct?
Yes.
Okay, and do you want to review then what you wish to change on page 2, and we will move this all as one amendment. One author's amendment.
Madam Chair, line 8. Cross out the word administrator and put superintendent or charter school director.
Okay.
Line 9, cross out the word administrator and insert superintendent or charter school director.
All right. Is that the, and then you're deleting lines 17, 18, and 19, and 20, correct?
That's correct, Madam Chair.
Okay. Are there any questions? Is this clear to everybody? Are there any questions about this? Representative Carlson.
Madam Chair, Ms. Larson, now, is the title skip the way the bill is and will be amended?
Offer that amendment.
But the record shows that what she thought it did.
Okay, it didn't. I get the impression that the title is all right. All right, are there any other questions about the amendment? Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. On line 14, unless Ms. Larson has a reason that pupil should be used, I think we should have student in place of pupil. This is on page 2, excuse me, line 14 under exemption.
We can do it either way, but student is fine if you'd like to change that to student. Can we incorporate that into the author's amendment?
Yes, Madam Chair.
All right. All right, are there any further questions or comments? Please, no more amendments. Representative Krinke. Did you have a question, or were you just...
No. If we want to talk consistency, on line 11, we use on line 10 and 11, we use school administrator's decision again. Are we changing that or not changing that?
Well, if the person is an administrator, you know, whoever is the head of the school is the administrator, right? Okay. All right. Are there any other further comments about this? Carl, Representative Nelson, did you have something on the amendment specifically?
Well, I think the amendment may relate to this. I'm just wondering, this change, are we requiring then that schools provide differentiated instruction if a child meets these three criteria? And I know that's the goal of all schools, and I'm just questioning, because we're mandating it, is there a fiscal impact there? And what is the fiscal note on this, then?
Representative Nelson, it will go to finance.
Oh.
So it's moving on to finance.
But maybe it's moving to Representative Meslow. Representative Meslow.
Madam Chair, I'm sorry. I hope I'm wrong, but I think that the change that we made on line 9 now makes line 9 directly contradict lines 16 through 18. On lines 16 through 8, this is page 1. On lines 16 through 18, what we're saying is that any time a student doesn't meet the one of those three requirements, the school has to provide differentiated instruction, whether they promote or not. The amendment that we just did on line 9 gives the school two alternatives. Either promote and provide differentiated instruction, or don't promote. But it doesn't tell us that the school is still obligated to provide the differentiated instruction. And I think that our change on line 9 now directly contradicts what we did on 16 through 18.
Can't you figure that 16 through 18 probably clarifies what we did?
Madam Chair, I think the problem is that when we say or on line 9, when we say that the school has to provide the differentiated instruction or not promote, we're telling the school district they don't have to provide the differentiated instruction if they hold the student back. And that's not what we're saying on 16 through 18.
Madam Chair, Representative, I see that. I'm trying to be very objective here. I see that as a clarification to what I said earlier. What's happening with so many amendments is you're losing the retention. And if your intention is to require anybody who has difficulty always gets differentiated instruction, then that says something different than we started with. I also wanted to clarify, if I may, Madam Chair, very quickly, differentiated instruction was defined there very carefully. The reason it was is because an attorney says you've got to tell us what that means. And I'm drawing now on my experience as a teacher and you know, principalship and superintendent. This definition really is probably what most schools should be doing, period. The intention was when a student is having difficulty, and you have to decide, what do I do with the student to best meet their needs? Either you decide, do I promote them to the next grade? That's a big decision when they've missed so much school and you don't know if they can be successful. But if you do promote them, you do need to have some sort of differentiated instruction for them. So we wrote the differentiated instruction to be whole class instruction. You see how that's written? And then the scope of it is totally up to the school. There was some good concern, I understand, after we left this morning about if a student is retained, doesn't that student need some sort of differentiated instruction? My own belief is yes. However, this scope is still left to the school to do it in a way that suits the school needs. And to say if a student is retained, they just get the same thing. Remember, the reason the student was retained is they weren't there for the instruction, much of it that happened the first time. So I'm deferring to Representative Wardlow's concern, which is very student-oriented. We really, whenever a student's having trouble, we should have differentiated instruction. I personally do not believe this puts a huge financial onus, because in every district I've been in, that's been the goal of elementary schools. It's just a way of stating that that's an expectation. I hope that helps and not confuses, given the late hour.
Does that answer your question, Representative Meslow?
Madam Chair, I appreciate Dr. Nelson's clarification, and I see what it is that we're striving for. I'm not convinced that that's what the language does.
Representative Wardlow, could you work with Ms. Nelson and just clean up this little section a little bit before we hear it in finance?
Madam Chair.
Give me your word of honor.
Absolutely.
Boy Scout.
Hand on my heart.
All right. Then let's pass the language that we have agreed on, and then if there's another little fix needed to clarify the differentiated instruction, that would be what you would be working on. All those in favor?
First of all, I just want to note that Ms. Larson did point out to me why it reads pupil on line 14, page 2. That is what's in statute, so that should remain pupil, not student.
All right, so you withdraw that one.
Yes,
okay, it will stay pupil. All right. Representative Carlson.
A quick question of Dr. Nelson or the author. Now with all of these changes, what have we really done? And I'm going back to the point that Representative Erdahl made earlier. Is there really, as a practical matter, any change relative to the school districts in this building?
Madam Chair?
Representative Wardlow.
One might say that, no, there isn't really, because we said either retain with instruction being different or promote with instruction being different. The intent of the original bill was to force schools to retain students who were not performing well, because there are principals, because of this not being a statute, will always promote students regardless, because they don't want the lawsuits that come from parents who are upset. That's one of the motivating factors. But when you think about promoting a student with differentiating instruction to make sure that he gets the attention he or she needs, then the student who's retained could be considered as being treated unfairly. Because if you repeat fourth grade and just do the same thing that you did before in fourth grade, who's to say the student won't fail again unless he's treated differently and had some of his needs met? Now, maybe that would mean giving a different fourth grade teacher. Maybe that means putting him into a fourth grade who happens to have an aide in there to help with kids that need that kind of attention. Or maybe it's with a teacher who is, most elementary teachers are, adept at meeting individual needs. And they will just focus on teaching that kid a little bit differently. That's why we're putting this in a statute, so that if someone is retained, they can't come at them with a lawsuit saying, hey, and besides, there is an appeal process. So that's the reason for this bill, is to give a message to our school systems that the student's very important, and don't just promote the person if it's in the student's best interest to stay. We cut this back to K through 6 because the older the child gets, the less retention does for the student. Does that answer your question?
Chair, I won't belabor it, but I am really left with the impression that we're not really changing much. I'm sort of like...
You know, this is very interesting, because you don't think we're changing anything, and Representative Nelson is scared to death we're adding a whole bunch of costs. So we must be doing something right one more time.
I'm picking up what Dr. Nelson said, that school districts should be doing this, and I have a feeling that most of them probably are, but I'll drop it.
All right, can we vote on the amendment?
Please.
All right, all those in favor of the amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Okay, the amendment passes. Representative Erdahl, did you have a question before we vote on the bill?
Let's just vote.
Representative?
No, he's going to talk. I don't know, I'm
going to vote. Representative Mariani, do you have a question?
I do, but we're glad we're able to represent.
We're voting in 4 minutes, folks. So let's make your questions quick. Representative Mariani, you may go first.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And maybe this question might be more for Dr. Nelson. As you probably know, my school district in St. Paul has, for a number of years, been working anti-social promotion, if you will, effort. I believe they call it the Excel program. I don't know all the particulars of it. As I understand it, it kicks in not at every grade level, but at 3, 5, 8, I believe. I'll learn more about it before K-12 meeting. But my question is, have you given thought about how this might impact my school district's particular approach? And if not, perhaps between now and K-12 we can talk about that. Because you're making this apply to every school district, but I think we're onto something that's working in St. Paul, and I would hate to mock that up.
Madam Chair, Representative
Nelson.
Representative, we did look at the St. Paul program. In fact, we were very interested in what had been done there. And the report we received was that it was successful, more successful in grades 3 and 5 and lesser so in grade 8. And when we inquired as to why, it was some of that social changes that happens in students' developmental level. In answer to your second question, I would see nothing in here that would change one iota what you're doing in St. Paul, because the decision at the end of every year is still up to the school. From what I understand, your school is trying to make the same kind of statement about some accountability that has to come. And back to Representative Carlson, I do believe this law that's in front of you does make a strong statement about accountability and will make a difference. And all I can say again is I called just to check for myself a couple of principals I've worked with and said, be my critical reviewer here. Is this going to make a difference? And the key was, when the school makes the decision for the retention, this person said it makes all the difference in the world. And this person, I would say, is one of the most caring, kind of principals that reaches out. But he said what happens in many of the other policies, the parent can say no even when the school wants to. This adds the level of accountability, but it gives the school the decision. And I believe it would conform, to the best of my understanding, with what you're doing in the program, which is great.
Does that answer your question, Representative?
Yes, and I'll visit people
now. Okay. Representative Wardlow renews his motion to pass House File 2285 as amended to Education Finance. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
The bill passes.
I think most of
we are adjourned. Thank you for your patience.